Welcome to the Pre-Post Film Review. I'm John Asquith.
And I'm Matt Stevenson. So this episode of the Pre-Post, we've got a little bonus show for you today. John has been attending some films at the recent Melbourne International Film Festival. So we thought we'd just take some time and do a little recap over the stuff that John's been checking out. Some things, perhaps, I think, that I've also seen that we can talk about, and some new stuff that even I haven't heard about. So it'll be a good chance to kind of have a recap over the past few weeks of what you've been catching up with. Tell us what your highlights are and lowlights and, yeah, just what you've been seeing. So,
Yeah.
I don't know. What stuff did you see, John, and what did you think of it?
I saw a good mixture of stuff this year, I think. I certainly didn't go as often as a lot of film buffs in the area, or in general go to film festivals in their city. I haven't counted actually what we're going to be talking about today, but it's like 6 movies or so.
It's not so bad.
It's not a bad effort, but I know a lot of people just go nuts and, you know, take weeks off work and all that sort of thing. But I saw a good mixture, I think, and something I think we've talked about on our other film festival podcasts is that when we talk about this stuff, we firstly try not to give away spoilers, and secondly talk about whether for better or worse movies that might interest other people when they come out in main release, or when they come to a festival in your town or city or wherever you are when you're listening to this. And we don't ramble on too much about things that you'll never see either.
Yeah.
Which can be, you know, sometimes you listen to a film podcast and it's like, you know,
yeah, great, I'll never see that.
I'll never see that. So why are you talking about it? Come on, get a grip. We're very conscious of that sort of thing. Yeah, so we're going to talk about this short film, Creswick, first up, Matt, which we have both seen, actually.
Yeah, it's one of the few films that you checked out that we both got a chance to watch.
Yeah, so I guess in the interest of full disclosure, we do know the writer of this short film, who's a good sort of friend of mine for many years, and wrote this short film. And I think this was the premiere. I don't think it has screened anywhere else yet, but I'm not sure. But yeah, just to be upfront, we're predisposed to like it, I suppose.
Yeah.
But we didn't know a lot about it before watching it. I just knew that he was working on a horror short. He sent us the link. And we were both really impressed with this one, I think.
Mm.
You know, it's a very subtle horror short. I guess it is horror, but it's almost like a psychological sort of thing in many ways, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's not like full of jump scares and gore and violence. It's much more subtle and all about building sort of a creepy mood. And
yeah.
It's really successful, I think, for the short runtime that it has, that it manages to build like such an effective, creepy atmosphere.
Mm. Yeah, I would agree. And I think that's a good point, that it is quite a quick runtime. It doesn't overstay its welcome at all. And in that short amount of time, it does a good job of building a creepy atmosphere. And just briefly, it seems to be about this woman who goes back to her childhood home and is helping her father either pack up to leave and sell the house or something like that.
It looks, they're definitely packing stuff up.
Yeah. And they briefly speak that the house doesn't feel right and there's a bit of a presence there. And then a couple of sort of spooky things happen. We won't give away anything.
Yeah, I kind of don't want to spoil any of the like twists, but there's some super successful sort of creepy moments. One involving chairs that I loved,
which
I think is like the highlight of that.
Weird,
it does sound very weird when you say it like that, but it's so well done.
Yeah, that's right. And if you check the entry on Letterboxd for the film, you'll see the poster has its chair on it. You might get an idea of what we're talking about. But I agree, it is a very, very successful scene, that scene with the chairs.
Mm.
And just a great example of visual storytelling where you're not over-explaining things and you're just looking at this progression of horror, let's say. Or possibly of of sort of mental disease or something like that. There's another layer to it definitely. Where it hints it. And, you know, it does a good thing that that shorts should do, I think, is that it's not just a straightforward story. There's a couple of other little elements that you can read into, and it ends with you thinking, you know, wondering about what happens next and what was actually going on.
Yeah, which there's, is always there's an ambiguity cool. to it that's
yeah.
that works really well. I think, like, I mean, perhaps maybe we can't do it in this episode, but if we find a link for it or we can get a copy of it once it's up online somewhere, we'll post it in the show notes for people to check out, because I think it's certainly worth watching. And it's like you said, Christian is a friend of the show, but I think, like you said, we might be predisposed to liking something he's involved in, but it certainly stands on its own. If I hadn't known Christian was involved, it's definitely worth watching. Don't write it off just because it's made by a mate of ours.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Yeah, so, and speaking of shorts, John, did you manage to catch any others? Because that's one of the highlights of being at a festival, I suppose, is being able to see short films on a big screen, which is super rare outside of the festival experience.
Yeah.
So, did you manage to go to any of the shorts programs at MIFF?
I went to the animation shorts.
Oh, cool.
Which I try to go to every year. They were good. I think they were not quite to my taste, I suppose, this year. It felt like the criteria was that they all had to be very serious and quite depressing. And I think that stuff is great in animation. I like adult animation and abstract animation and all that sort of stuff, because so often what we see is for families or kids, and you can get it gets very typecast that way. But when you're sitting there for however long it is, an hour or a bit under an hour of relentless, either hitting you over the head with a political message or just a darkness or a cynical sort of look at humanity, which all the films in their own sort of right, if you just saw them online, were impressive. But nothing actually stood out to me that much, because they were all of a certain tone and it all became a bit too much just as I was sitting there watching it. And I know we've been together, Matt, in past years, and there's been a really good mix of serious stuff, lighthearted stuff, and things in between. And I didn't quite feel that this year.
Yeah, that's a bit disappointing, because that's usually, like you said, one of the joys of going to one of these shorts compilations is you get such a tonal roller coaster in a good way of like sort of bouncing between serious and funny and so that is a bit disappointing. Was there anything, even though they were all a bit serious, was there anything in particular that stood out or that people should keep an eye out for?
One of the ones that stood out to me was a short called Spring Jam, and I think it partly stood out to me because it was lighter in tone and felt more like a classic short, which was sort of more comedy based. Not that they all have to be like that, but you know that there is definitely a lineage of doing that in animation. And it was sort of about this young stag, I suppose you'd say, who's trying to find a mate, and in this world you have little birds that land on your antlers and sing a song along with you, like a mating song,
right?
And all the big buff kind of moose animals,
stags,
stags, exactly, stags. You know, can do it, and he can't, and so he sort of ends up on this like bumbling adventure to find his own way of singing. And so that was, I really like that. And the other one, which was very dark, but stood out to me in a good way, was called Mrs. Metro. And it was an Australian short.
Cool.
Very social commentary kind of stuff. And I feel like this will end up online at some point. And it's set on a train in Melbourne, on one of the metro trains. This sort of tramp lady has these bags, and she gets off the train and leaves one of them on there, and there's a baby in there.
Jesus.
And no one on the train wants to deal with the baby, and they're all looking at their phones and stuff, which I thought was, you know, a really cool kind of commentary on lots of things about how we look at our phones and how we ignore things that we don't like, especially on trains. If there's someone a bit crazy, you kind of just look away or whatever. And then it gets almost darkly Miyazaki-ish, and this blobby I guess this is spoilers, by the way, but this blobby woman falls out of the roof of the train when no one wants to deal with the baby, and she lands on top of the baby and suffocates it.
Fuck.
So it stops crying. And then everyone on the train applauds her, and you know, because she solved the problem, and that's kind of it.
Wow.
It was just so dark and weird, and it was cool to see an Aussie short that was like that,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, good point.
Something uniquely Melbourne, which was very cool.
Yeah, they sound great. I really want to check them out. Perhaps we'll, after we finish recording, we'll do a bit of a search, and if we can find either of these online, and like I said with Creswick, if we can find links to them somewhere, we'll pop them in the show notes or mention them in upcoming kind of tweets or Facebook posts or something, so you guys can hopefully check them out at some point.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good idea.
But what about feature films that you saw, John? What about, I don't know how you want to do this, maybe what was your favourite thing that you saw in terms of the features?
Ooh, okay. Yeah, all right, let's do that. The favourite movie I saw, and I feel like this could be a little bit like The Witch last year for us, and maybe not in terms of how much we gushed, but you know, one of these festival gems that rises up and appeals to our sensibilities, mm. Matt. And, you know, I feel like I can sense a bonus episode of the previous film review coming for this. This was definitely my favourite film of the festival, Evolution. And it's a French film that has been doing the festival rounds and getting quite a lot of buzz.
Mm.
And much like something like The Witch or Under the Skin, it's a very slow burn and one of those movies you have to be in the mood for.
Yeah.
You know, it's never action-packed or anything like that, but it has a lot to say, and it does it in a way that is very artful but very genre as well. It's that thing that you and me love, Matt, where you have hardcore genre elements with this great artistic sensibility wrapped around it. It's just a brilliant experience. I don't want to say too much because I didn't know much going in, and I think that really helps. But what I did know going in, and I don't think this is a spoiler, is that it is a bunch of young boys on an island being looked after by these sort of 30-something-year-old women.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the only people on the island. And the women have sort of a nurse-like a role in terms of how they take care of these boys. So it's like a medical sort of thing, and strange things are happening. And it does, I want to say, not quite horror, but definitely psychological horror and almost sci-fi and almost... almost, Matt, cosmic horror. Almost.
Ooh.
And I won't say any more because I wasn't expecting that sort of thing. And not in a huge way, but if you're familiar with Lovecraft, there's little hints at things like that. Not specifically Lovecraft, but those sorts of things.
John, you're pushing all my buttons right here. That sounds so good. Sounds so good.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's hard to say any more, but it's... you know, as I said, it's a slow burn and very slow pace, but when you're in the mood for that sort of thing, you're just relishing this weird world that you're in, and it's beautifully shot. The performances are very good, especially by the central kid who is, you're with him in like pretty much every scene. It's all from his perspective, and I'm sure you could guess some weird shit happens in this movie, and he does a fantastic job. It's very unsettling. There's a lot of stuff that it has to talk about, a lot of great thematic content, and it's just really blew me away, and I actually had high hopes going into it as well. This wasn't like last year with The Witch where I just picked it because it sounded cool, but I knew this had a lot of good buzz, but it still exceeded my expectations.
Okay, that's good.
So Evolution is definitely one to look out for, but as I said, you know, if you've got to be in the mood for that sort of thing.
That sounds great. And I mean,
that was my favorite.
I'm not sure whether there's a further release planned in Australia, but definitely for our London listeners, it did get a small theatrical release a few months ago and kind of vanished almost straight away. But it is available on the Curzon Home Cinema streaming service for like £3 or something. So any London listeners can check it out there. And I plan to do that in the next week or so. So yeah, I think a bonus episode might be on the cards.
Yeah, I think we should do that for sure.
Cool.
Yeah, and I obviously it will be out in some form for everyone at some point.
Yep.
Online, which will be very cool. Highly recommend to our loyal listeners, all 10 of
them. Yeah, that's great. I'm really excited to check that out. I'm glad that it lived up to expectations. Very cool. So what about moving on? Yeah, what other films? Was there any other highlights? Anything else that stood out for you?
Yeah, I would say the other highlight was this documentary called Tickled.
Cool.
Which I know you've heard of, Matt, mm-hmm. and again, probably most of our listeners have heard of. It's sort of getting a lot of buzz amongst the festival circuit and all that sort of thing. And this is a New Zealand documentary, which I actually didn't know until I went in. All I knew was that it was, getting well received. I didn't know it was from New Zealand, which is cool mm-hmm. because it's, I mean, you know, I'm in Australia, but New Zealand's close enough, whatever. So yeah, I don't want to infuriate the listeners too much, but this is another one I don't want to
say too much about. This is,
I know,
not
yeah,
talking
pretty
about
much
film.
Is exactly yeah, you know, the opposite of what we said at the start of explaining things you can't see, or at least explaining things you can't talk about. But yeah, this is the premise is that a journalist in New Zealand finds online these videos of tickling competitions where a bunch of men, usually muscly, kind of good-looking dudes, are tickling each other.
Competitively, right? Like, it's not...
Competitively,
it's not
just
like yes. a funny YouTube video, yeah.
No, yeah, yeah, that's right. It's not like, hee-hee. one guy is tied down and he's getting tickled either by one person or three other dudes. And it's sort of like, how long can you last?
And last until what, though? Like, what is the point where you... Like, until you laugh? Is that what it is?
No, but they laugh straight away. It just goes for, like, you just agree. As far as I know, you just agree to... So, for this 10 minutes, I'm going to be strapped here and you're going to tickle me and I'm going to sort of, like, writhe around and try and get out of it. At least from the film shows, there's no actual, it's called competitive tickling, I think, to fool people, but it's more than that.
Right.
And as the film goes on, maybe a bit stranger and creepier than that.
Interesting.
So the documentary I can compare this to the most, and which is why it's best not to know anything about it, is Catfish.
Ooh, cool.
The doco from a few years ago, which had that huge buzz of you won't believe what happens and all that sort of thing. And I would say this is similar in that, you start going down this rabbit hole with this New Zealand journalist and it just gets very strange, very strange, very interesting, very dark. The journalist that we're following, David Farrier, is very, very funny guy and has a lot of sort of witty insight into what's happening. So there's that sort of streak of humour throughout it all, which is... makes it very entertaining to watch, but there's a very disturbing side to it as well. So yeah, highly recommend this one to everyone. And I imagine this will get a wide release everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, still small kind of art house release, but most people would be able to see this and I would not be surprised if it's on Netflix very soon and maybe heavily promoted because it's so interesting and it's something that everyone can watch because it's so strange and bizarre.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. This has been on my radar for a little while because of, like you said, it's been getting quite positive buzz. And I think you're right, again, I'm not quite sure what the release strategy is in Australia, but for London listeners, it's just come out this week. I think Studio Canal have got it, so it's a pretty wide release across art house cinemas at the moment in London, so you can run to the cinema and check it out now, which, again, I plan to do soon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe we can talk about this on another episode as well. We just fucked the timing up for this episode completely because we could have had really interesting discussions about both these things, but I was too lazy to see.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that sounds really great. Really, really cool. So what's next? What else can you tell us about, John?
So I'll go through Another one sort of connected to that, which I was disappointed with, and surprisingly disappointed, was My Scientology Movie from, you know, the awesome Louis Theroux.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who is, you know, one of my favorite journalists and documentary makers. And I'm sure many of our listeners have seen a lot of his work. Actually, when I was watching Tickled, I often found myself thinking of that guy, David Ferrier, as a New Zealand version of Louis Theroux. He's very, very similar.
Interesting.
And so it was interesting then to go to, you know, Louis Theroux's first kind of cinematic feature length documentary and be disappointed because I love his work so much. So it's called My Scientology Movie, and it's his attempt at, you know, trying to find out what everything he can about Scientology. But unfortunately, he didn't get access to anything, or very few people wanted to talk to him. And so what he ends up doing is talking to a few ex-members who have done the rounds on a lot of documentaries. So if you've seen documentaries before, there was one this year called Going Clear, which was quite a big one. And that's a very good documentary that gives you the whole history of Scientology. A lot of the same people from that documentary end up in this one. So it's things you've heard before, and to fill in the gaps, he stages reenactments of key things that have happened among upper members of Scientology, where the CEO, I guess you'd say, I don't know his official title, but the guy that's the head now of Scientology is, you know, apparently quite unstable and abuses a lot of people he works with and things like that. And so they stage reenactments with his character and,
interesting,
you know, things that he's gotten up to. Yeah, it sounds interesting and almost like not like the act of killing, but maybe a similar thing. You're not getting the actual people to reenact, but you're sort of showing things through that that sort of lens of looking back on them. But it doesn't come together, and a lot of it feels like he struggled to get people to talk and to get footage. They didn't cut a lot out. So everything he filmed is in there, and a lot of it is like, why are you showing me this?
Yeah,
so
interesting.
We see Louis casting all the actors for this reenactment he's going to do, and it's like watching behind the scenes, and, you know, everyone says something funny and, you know, we all laugh, but it really doesn't add. For me, I got annoyed. There's a lot of that stuff in it, a lot of behind the scenes stuff, and it felt a little almost indulgent to me, like, you know, look, this is funny. We're making this reenactment, and we're in Hollywood, and we're casting, and people are a bit strange. And, you know, they cast a guy that looks like Tom Cruise, and they just show him all the time, and just because he's a lookalike, and it's meant to be funny. And the first couple of times it's funny, but they keep showing him, and he ultimately does nothing, even in the reenactment. Like, he's not in that scene. So I don't know why it's we spend all this time. Yeah, I don't know. I sound like I'm getting angry about it, but it was disappointing. I had really high hopes for this because I love the way that Louis is able. He's such a polite, nice guy, and he puts people at ease that he talks to, and he infiltrates, you know, like these Nazis and these racist people and, you know, all these interesting groups in all his other documentaries. And he didn't quite get that access this time. Yeah. So he's like on the outside looking in, and yeah, it just didn't come together for me. It's not terrible, but it was a disappointment.
Do you think if you hadn't seen Going Clear, like, for example, I've still not seen Going Clear, do you think the documentary would be more successful if the information was newer, or it didn't feel like they were rehashing the same?
I think that's a really good question, and I am really glad that I saw Going Clear because I knew the history of Scientology. So you think that informed it, in a way... Yeah, and what they believe, he doesn't even really, he goes over that very, very quickly in My Scientology Movie, and I think that's a mistake because people don't know that, you know, they know that it's a bit of a crazy sort of thing, but they don't know how it started or what these people actually believe. I was glad that I had seen it, and I think if you hadn't seen it, you'd actually be a bit confused because he brushes over it very quickly.
Okay, cool. Interesting. I still think I'll probably check it out, but maybe I'll take your advice and see Going Clear first, and then
Yeah, I would recommend that. Yeah.
Check out my Scientology movie on Netflix or something when it appears a little further down the line. Cool. What's next? Have you got anything else to talk to us about? There's still a couple more we haven't covered, I think. Is that right?
There is, yeah. So there's two more. I saw the new Jim Jarmusch film.
Oh, yeah. This has been getting a lot of good press.
It has, yeah. So this stars Adam Driver.
Who's in everything
of Girls
nowadays.
And Star Wars fame. Yeah, and lots of other stuff. And who I think is a brilliant actor.
Yeah, I really
he's,
like him.
Awesome in everything that he's in. And so this is the story of he lives in a town called Patterson, and his name is Patterson in New Jersey,
right.
America. And he's a bus driver, and he is also sort of an amateur poet.
Right.
And it's one of these films which isn't particularly about anything. It just follows him literally through a week of his life. There's titles Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Right.
That sort of thing. And he goes to work, he drives the bus, he overhears people talking in the bus and their conversations, and then he writes some poetry at the end of the day and comes back to his wife, has dinner with her, goes to the pub, talks to people at the pub. It's kind of that every day with a very loose kind of arc.
Yeah, yeah.
Which sounds really good, and there are elements of it which are very, very good and I appreciate, but I did find myself feeling that it was a little too tedious, and I kind of feel bad saying that, and I don't want it to come across as though I need ADD editing and all that sort of thing. But the moments I enjoyed the most where he's driving the bus and listening to people talk, and where he comes up with his poetry, I really liked all that stuff. But there's a lot of weird things where he comes home to his wife and doesn't seem particularly happy to be with her, but then he'll go off and write poetry about how much he loves her. And
interesting.
It seemed to be, without giving too much away, it seemed to be setting up a conflict that never happens.
Mm.
And I don't know whether it was one of those things like, well, real life, you get annoyed at people, but then, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
You move on. It's very much, you know, that sort of film where it's just everyday life.
Yeah.
Observational sort of things. And he's a very quiet character.
Mm.
He just listens for most of the movie.
Interesting.
Yeah, it almost felt like a play or something like that where you're in these set locations, bus, home, pub, and these characters sort of come in and out. So it was good, but I did find it a little too ponderous and a little too tedious at times.
Yeah.
But definitely worth checking out.
That's interesting because it's almost like, especially it sounds like with a structure like that where you're constantly revisiting the same thing over and over again. I mean, perhaps that's the point about like the monotony of life, and that's what most people live, but then that's a fine line to tread in order to keep it interesting and keep your brain engaged. Otherwise it's just like, oh, I get it, life's boring, you do the same shit every day.
Well, that's exactly right. That's what I said to my wife as we came out of it, that, you know, I get the point.
that
this is life, this is everyday life, and you are presenting, you know, a semi-realistic portrayal of someone in a small town, but the problem is that after a while it is just someone's life, and it's not particularly exciting.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I guess that's not to say that that's not an invalid story to tell, but perhaps it's just not something you necessarily fall in love with. It's just something you can appreciate from afar and go, oh yeah, you know, like you said, I can see what you're doing, but it didn't blow you out of the cinema seat.
Yeah, and you know, I do feel a little bad because the reviews have been very, very positive for this. And I think, you know, Jim Jarmusch carries that sort of weight now as well, where a lot of people go in with high expectations and therefore sort of are going predisposed to loving the movie. So I kind of feel bad that it didn't click with me. And I could see what it was trying to do and I appreciate elements of it, but it just didn't come together for me.
Cool. All right, so that brings us to your last film. You've got one more to talk about. So what was the last thing that you saw at MIFJOM?
Yeah. So the last one is one we've both seen, Matt, which is the latest Nicholas Winding Refn film.
Yes.
The Neon Demon. The
Neon Demon.
Yeah. So maybe we can have a mini chat about this.
Cool, yeah, because we haven't spoken about this. I'll let you go first, because I've done a lot of talking. At all.
No, we haven't even talked at all in person about it, or really even messaged during the episode.
Yeah, this is the first of Nicholas Winding Refn's films that I was super conflicted over. I loved Drive, and then really, really liked Only God Forgives, and I thought that was unfairly treated by critics and audiences. Like, people didn't give it credit for what it was trying to do because they wanted a commercially Drive successor. And I loved its weird sort of Lynchian horror. Anyway, so I went into this with super high expectations, and I should say, I didn't watch any trailers, but I had read that this was going to be his horror film, and that made me so excited, because the stuff I liked the most out of Only God Forgives was the, like, nightmarish horror sequences that kind of went into weird abstract horror moments. So I just thought, like, he is so perfectly suited to horror. So I was sort of mildly disappointed when this turned out to be kind of more of a weird satire with, like, tinges of horror. I mean, it kind of descends into a weird, crazy horror at the end, but it's not really horrific in the sense of being frightened or afraid. It's, like, horrific in terms of the violence, I suppose. So, yeah, this was... I was kind of, like, wildly swinging between loving this film and hating it in the cinema. And I feel like this is probably what people have experienced in earlier Nicholas Winding Refn films, where I was completely on board, whereas this is the first time where I've been on and off. So, yeah, like, visually, he's still amazing. There's some shots in this that are incredible. But then there were moments that really felt pretentious and on the nose. And there was stuff that I'm still sort of coming to terms with in terms... Like, that honestly made me super uncomfortable, and I can't tell if it was... There's a smart social commentary behind it, or whether he's just being provocative and trying to piss people off. And if it's the latter, I don't respect it, but if it's the former, then I think it's really cool. And I don't know where I fall on that spectrum yet. I keep changing depending on, like, what I've read and what interview I've listened to most recently. But yeah, I guess my overall impressions were positive, even though I said I was mixed. Like, I kind of much prefer to see weird, crazy artistic shit like this. At least he's trying stuff, whether it's successful or not, and I appreciate that. And it, even just visually and sonically, I think it's, like, definitely worth seeing. But I didn't love it like I've loved some of his other films. What about you?
Yeah, I would, you know, I'm on the same page as well, as always, but yeah, I found it a very conflicting watch, even, you know, while you're in there in the cinema. It wasn't something where afterwards I started questioning things. It was one scene I'd be like, this is amazing. Yeah. And then the next scene I'd be like, what the hell? Like, you know, this is like amateur hour at art student film sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you're right. You can't tell how much is deliberate and how much is accidental. I'm just trying to be, as you said, provocative, or this is an artistic statement or shot or composition or, you know, whatever it is. And I feel like in his... I haven't seen his whole catalogue, but I have seen Drive and Only God Forgives, which, you know, same as you, I really loved. And his artistic sensibility in those was so... You know, it's in your face, but there is also a subtleness to what is actually happening at the same time. And you're right, in this film, there is... It's like almost like a... strange dark comedy in a way, and it's just hard to digest, you know, what the one hand it's very obvious what he's trying to say about superficiality and Hollywood and all this sort of stuff, but on the other hand it is very 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 sexual movie, and it's like praising and condemning at the same time, these sort of like Hollywood or even Western ideas of like what is a beautiful woman and things like that, which you know, to just to get to the my final sort of judgment, like you, I like, and I like that it causes this conflict, and it makes you think, and it's you know, it's interesting. It's much better than seeing something that's boring and cynical and not trying. But it is hard to digest. And even now, a few weeks after, I still don't really know what to make of it. And I kind of want to see it again, but I also kind of don't, you know, because it is very indulgent and it goes on and on. And, you know, his framing, which I love, almost goes too far in this film as well, where it's like, okay, you know, we get it. You know, she's looking in a mirror. Okay, I know, reflection, superficiality, and even just the thing of like people standing, you know, he loves people standing with like a blank expression on their face. And it just goes on, you know, it's like, are you trying to be like Kubrick or are you actually trying to say something here? I don't know.
Yeah, it's really weird because you're right. And the even like specific shots I would have like bounce back and forth between love and hate. Like there was one of the moments where they're in that entirely white, like set, photography set, and the camera just does like a slow pan, like it almost does a 360, and everyone's it looks like they're still, but it's just like the flashbulb keeps going off, but no one is moving.
And they're not moving.
And I was literally, for the entirety of that shot, as it started, I was like, wow, that's brilliant. And then I was like, oh, I don't know, actually, this is a bit dumb, like, get on with it. And then it went on even longer, and I was like, man, this is like incredible, I can't believe he's holding it this long. And then it went on longer. And
I had the exact same reaction to that shot. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same. Weirdly polarizing. But yeah, I guess to reiterate what I said before, like that in a way, in a meta way, is exciting. And I like that it makes me question things.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't know. It is very provocative, like the weirdly sexualized stuff, and having the main character be 16 years old is maybe very uncomfortable a lot of the time, which I think was probably intentional, but then... Well, yeah. I mean, I think it was definitely intentional, but I'm not quite sure what he was actually trying to say, like whether there's a legitimate reason behind that. And just the whole ending, I mean, again, I get the whole, like, cannibalistic nature of the industry and, like, wanting to consume beauty, like, literally in the film, which I like, even if it's a bit obvious and has been said before. But then there's the weird stuff, like... I can't think of her name, but the makeup artist who's like convulsing on the floor naked under the moon, who just like starts bleeding from the vagina randomly. Like, what? You know?
Yeah, I know. I still don't quite understand what was going on there. So we're very conflicted about the Neon Demon, Matt.
I'd recommend people see it, but.
Oh, yeah, me too. Me too. Just be prepared to be confounded and confronted and consumed.
Cool. Well, any other sort of final thoughts on your MIFF experiences for this year? Did you think it was a good festival, an average lineup?
I think, you know, it always depends on what you see. I felt like I saw a good mix of things this year. Some stuff disappointed and some stuff rose above, you know, and we've talked about this many times, but I love when a film festival is a great experience where you might not know much about a movie and you go in kind of blind and it just blows you away and becomes, you know, one of your favorites for the year. And I love that experience. And it's very hard for us to get that with more mainstream releases because marketing is so heavy and show so much, and particularly for this podcast, which we you know, backed ourselves into a corner where we have to watch
and complain about it all the time. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm grateful for having that experience again with a couple of movies this year, and I'm excited to talk about some of them with you, Matt, in some bonus episodes soon.
Yeah, that sounds great. I can't wait. And yeah, as we mentioned previously, we will try to put links for any short films or info about stuff that John saw at MIFF that we think might be useful, either in the show notes or on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. And instead of doing our ending spiel for this bonus episode, actually, if there's any Melbourne listeners who saw stuff at MIFF, you know, specifically that want to write in, it would be very cool to hear from you guys and what you saw and... you know, what were highlights and lowlights?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Lowlights? Is that a word?
Is now. Let us know what you thought of the Neon Demon too. I want some more people to weigh in on that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
And we can cut this part out, but from halfway through the movie, I was bursting to go to the toilet, and I was in the middle of the row in the comedy theatre in Melbourne. Worst. Tiny seats, I couldn't get up, and it's, you know, it's such a slow movie, and I was just like, come on.
To be fair, that may well have influenced your view. I feel
I'm sure it did.
Especially when you're that uncomfortable through a film, because I've had that recently where in a few films I've been like utterly dying for a piss. And I used to be really good and never leave. And a couple of times I've had to just go, I am literally, I'm a 32-year-old man and I'm going to piss myself if you do not stand up go to the toilet.
Yeah. And I couldn't do that. I couldn't get up. Like, I would have, it's been so cramped. I would have stepped on people's feet.
Yeah, it would have taken you 20 minutes to get to the end of the row. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I kept feeling like it was about to end because of that as well. Worst. You know, fades to black, and then it's like Saturday. And I'm like, oh, it's a whole nother day.
Yeah, you're like already half out of your seat to stand up and then go back down. I know exactly.
And he'll sit there in silence for 5 minutes and then write some poetry, and then you hear the poetry. And you know, when you really need to piss, and he often sits at a fucking waterfall as well.
It's like the worst possible combination.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, that's fucking hilarious.